coming. Pass is picked off.
He's going to go looking again, and it's picked off by Stephon Gilmore down on the right sideline.
Into the end zone, and he's picked off. Back the other way.
There we go.
Oh, geez, come on. Why do you have to do this, right? First, instant your video comes on, you're wearing a Harvard top, you're going through law school, and you've played in the NFL and professional rugby. This is like top Trump's wanker over here, completely.
Showing off, man.
Oh, did I ever tell you guys I'm also really intelligent as well as a pro athlete? This guy.
I'm dead. That is brilliant. Oh.
Christian Scotland-Williamson joining us on the podcast. Let's just dive straight into it after that. I mean, former Pittsburgh Steeler practice squad member and tight end in the NFL and legal mind working to be one of the finest. Are you going to be a barrister, Christian? Is this the,
yeah,
is this the
yeah,
end?
Yeah.
Oh, God. So you're even going to get the cool wigs. Great.
Oh,
are you going to be a KC now? It's not a QC anymore. KC.
Well, hopefully. I'm probably about 20 years away from that, so stay tuned.
Oh, yeah. And you're younger than me. That's the other kicker. Oh, all my life's ahead of me. Oh,
but
it's great.
To be fair, if you look at football, like soccer, Jude Bellingham is still like 18 years old, and he's been to a European final and probably makes about 100 grand a week now. So it's all relative.
Yeah, it's all relative, but I'm still at the very bottom of that tray, is what you're saying.
I'm on the wrong side of this scale.
Dude, how you doing, man? It's good to see you again, bro.
Yeah, you too, man. As always, happy to chop it up with you guys tonight. There's a lot to talk about, by the way. This week's features, bloody hell, there's going to be some games that go either way.
That's just the NFL this season, though, mate.
It's madness. It's very mediocre football. It's not been the best football.
Tom Brady said it. He was like, there's a lot of bad football out there.
Well, most of it was being played by the Bucks last week.
I was going to say, I don't know if that was a shot at himself and his entire team, but
I've seen Brady get more pissed off on sidelines with teammates this season than I have done in the previous however many years. I know it's happened, but like, wasn't the Patriots all like, high fives, yeah, that's great, baby, that's what we want. That was like the everlasting clip of Brady on the sideline with them. And this year, it's him and Rodgers are both irate at everybody around them every
game.
Well,
the thing is that Rodgers is throwing to guys that we've never heard of, and Brady's still throwing to Mike Evans. So like, it's kind of, I don't know, like he does. I think that they were expecting to run it back this year. Like, they were strong last year. They won the Super Bowl the year before. They're expecting to run it back this year, and they're struggling. And the way they're dealing with this adversity is not a good look right now.
Mm-hmm. I think the whole Tampa Tom effect is worn off. Where,
yeah,
I genuinely think it was a one season deal where the impact would be noticeable first year. Obviously, you wouldn't expect him to go on a road run to the Super Bowl. That was obviously insane. But people are saying, oh, Super Bowl hangover, but it was 2 years ago. And I think more, obviously, there's the off-field rumors with Tom, but obviously they had a few injuries in the receiver room. I really haven't seen Julio Jones do anything. I think is the writing on the wall for him, I guess, medically, because he can't really stay healthy, even though he's like one of the top receivers to do it. But with that whole Tom Brady smashing iPads, berating his offensive line, all it would take is one of them to be like, all right, I'm just going to take it easy, one rep, and then he just gets smoked. So that's a tough one to really justify in the circumstances.
Yeah, and I doubt he can take those hits like he could do. I mean, there's been a video going around social media that's kind of cropped up in the last few weeks, obviously because of the Grady Jarrett sack that never was. Can you imagine if somebody in the NFL did this to Tom Brady, and it's a Bills defender just going shoulder it? I mean, it's a clean hit on a standing upright QB, but he just goes levels Brady. And in fairness, Brady pops back up afterwards. But I don't think that's sort of the hit these days on a 49-year-old man or whoever we're talking about Tom Brady. Then he's not popping up after those. And I think this is more of a sign that he's feeling being in the NFL for like the first time that he has done in a long time, when he takes a few beatings, as opposed to maybe time is finally kind of catching up with Tom. But
yeah, I think that's fair. I also just think that across the board, defenses just seem to have caught up this year as well. Mm-hmm. Like, which is really nice to see. Like, everybody we've talked about on this podcast, like, the games aren't as exciting when you're not having scores of like 35-30 and stuff. But like the last few years, the pendulum has swung so far towards offensive players. We saw in the offseason, like, wide receivers getting paid insane money, like their quarterbacks. It is quite nice to see it. Like I played defense in uni, and like that was what really got me into American football. I really love watching good defense, and it's nice to see it swing back a bit. Do you know what I mean? Like,
but also, how much of that as well is poor quarterback play, which is allowing defenses to shine? Because there aren't that many good quarterbacks in the league. Dak Prescott's coming back, and obviously the contract would dictate that he's great. But if you actually really look at the production and the impact on an in-game scenario and the decision-making, like, Daniel, Giants are 5-1, probably going to be 6-1 after this week, which is absolutely madness. Like, Ollie, you know, we called that game. No one had them remotely winning that game. But then you look at, like, a quarterback like Daniel Jones. He's an elite quarterback in this season with his production. But, like, last season before, you think, like, oh, there's no way. But he's quarterbacking a 5-1 team, and the results speak for themselves. So then how much of that is, like, scheme and defense's adjustments? Or are we just seeing kind of like a fallow period for probably 60% of the NFL's offenses?
Well, I still insist that it's the changing of the guard at the moment in the NFL. Like, we were blessed with like a litany of greats. Like, you think of the era that we've just had: Rodgers, Ryan, Rivers, Brady, Roethlisberger, Breeze. Like, that's a fantastic crop of eight or so quarterbacks that are up there with some of the best all-time passing yard leaders, touchdown leaders, etc. And you look now, they're either gone or they're old. And because, and I know I sound like such an old record going on this, but because the current blend of quarterback is like mobile, we want speed, we want mobile. All of these guys coming out of college are trying to play college football in the NFL, and defenses are so much faster, so much better than in college, that these guys don't have that same arm ability and aren't working on that arm ability the same as others. I mean, I'm always going to point to Kyler Murray. I'm still going to stand by my, at this point, the way Lamar Jackson is playing, he'll never win a Super Bowl, Lamar Jackson. And that's not me saying he's a bad player. He's a phenomenal athlete. But that quarterback level, you have to be elite with the arm to be up in those levels. And we don't see that. And we don't see enough of that coming through college either. And I think that's actually a worry, that college QBs are so evolved around mobility at that level that we are going to start seeing, not worse, but fewer greats maybe.
But I think you're right. But then you've got, just to pull you up on that, Ollie, we've still got Herbert, who you love.
Yeah,
we've got Josh Allen, who's amazing, and we
didn't
Patrick
come into
Mahomes.
The league throwing well. Josh Allen didn't come into the league.
Yeah, he did. And you so got like, Joe Burrow. And if he can
your boy
stay on
Jalen Hurts as well is probably my third favorite.
We just need to lay off on Philadelphia for a little bit because they are.
You're wearing the hat, bro. You can't not talk about it. You're 6-0. Like,
I know it's
on?
Amazing, and I have spoken with. I was chatting with Richard Graves. Friend of the show, is a big Dallas fan, and we had a very amicable chat on Monday, which is weird because normally we'll be horrible to each other after a Dallas Eagles game. And he was like, "No, Eagles were the better team. You were better." I was like, "This is a trap. What are you doing here?" And but we both kind of said, and I spoke with Charles Wolfer from the Times as well this week, who's a big Eagles fan. We all have said the Eagles are not putting full four quarter games together yet, and it is a defense and a run game that is still the main backbone. Hurts has done enough. He put on big numbers, obviously, and high quality performances against the Vikings, against Washington. But for instance, when you needed him against Dallas, when Lane Johnson went out and you were like, okay, this is a time that you need to step up now because you don't quite have that same offensive line in front of you. He didn't. Dallas got back into that game, and worryingly so on Sunday night. You know,
but at the same time, that's a stacked defense. That's the defense of the season, in my opinion. And this is a third year QB, second year starting, right? So there's still going to be looks that he hasn't seen. Josh Allen's probably arguably the front runner for MVP, and he just got a big deal, and he's now playing at that level. He wasn't playing at this level at year three. So at the same time, in terms of the quarterback like maturation through their career, like, I reckon it's like year four year five in the system where you start really seeing acceleration, unless you're like a Patrick Mahomes, of course. But that's just like the one-off unicorn.
Or you're Geno Smith and you're doing it at age 31.
He's the finest of the wines, that guy.
Okay, here's a question. Russell Wilson and the Seahawks trade, what was it, like 6 picks, 3 players,
mm-hmm.
Plus the Broncos had to sign him to that whopper of a deal. Contract.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the story of the NFL, you know, this season, because that Broncos defense is legit. They're only allowing, what, like 6 passing touchdowns first 5-6 games, something like that. And they're holding it. And that is with the offense not producing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that probably like the hot topic of the NFL is kind of like, look at the Seahawks, what they're doing with Geno Smith, the picks, and they've got a few players. And then look at Let's Ride Country.
Oh, yeah. Pete Carroll is just soaking this whole thing up. Like, it doesn't really matter what the Seahawks record is. I mean, obviously, if they created at the end of the year, but like if they say they finish, I don't know, 9-8 or something, like, and just miss the playoffs, I think Pete Carroll will just be basking on a beach somewhere like, I've nailed this. Mm. Like, so happy with himself.
So do you think then that second Super Bowl, the run pass, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that the legacy of that will cause people to question now, like, whose fault really was it in the Super Bowl?
I still think everybody's going to look and say, you got to run that ball. There's no way you can not. I still watch that game and expect them to run it. Like, I don't know what it
is. Yeah, they have a running back as well, with Beast Mode and Marshawn Lynn. So then, this is what I'm asking then. Is it the Russell Wilson we're seeing now that we didn't understand that he always was? That's my question.
I don't think so. I think we always over-evaluated how good Russell Wilson was. And actually, the Seahawks system and the fact that they had always had a good run game that took a lot of pressure off Wilson as well probably gave him a massive advantage. But I do think also, you know, we saw Russell Wilson have some incredible strings of games and some incredible seasons. You know, was it 2 years ago when first 6 games, he was like nailed on MVP because he was carrying that Seahawks side. So we know that's in him, but we also know that he could do it in Seattle. And there's something in Denver that I don't know what it does to quarterbacks. I don't know if it's the light air and they find it difficult to throw in lighter air or something. But some of the reads that Russell Wilson is missing, he's playing like a guy who's got absolutely no confidence in anybody else around him as well. It's not just him playing badly, but it's also him looking like he's got no relationship with anyone.
I know. It's so weird. It's like they didn't have an off season. Like their complete lack of ability to gel as a unit, that offense is, I mean, are they the worst in the NFL? The Panthers probably behind them.
I think it's Panthers then them for a point scored. Or
that's
something
rough.
Like
that is rough from like expectations of where we thought, you know, they would be in that division and where that division would be. And then we're 6 games in and they are so hard to watch.
Because people thought it was just plugging a QB in your Super Bowl contenders. I think that's why they paid that massive contract value.
I know.
But isn't some of it as well down to coaching and gameplay decisions? I mean, you saw what Melvin Gordon was like after the game when he was like, they took me out of the game and I've got no idea why. No one's spoken to me. Nobody told me if there was a change in game plan. It was a really interesting interview. It was really well done by the woman from NFL Network who spoke to him, because she just tiptoed around an incredibly pissed off player and got some great answers out of him. Mm-hmm. And that speaks to something, because that was the other thing, that Denver, it wasn't just a quarterback at the end of the day. They had a really solid run game already built into this system. So it was like Russell was going to be able to do it. So you have to point huge fingers at Nathaniel Hackett and what he and his coaches are doing in setting up this team to be able to win. And whether it's a case of he's not the right guy to be in Denver if Aaron Rodgers wasn't coming with him.
Mm. I think if you look at the Giants coaching scenario and then you compare it to Denver, it's night and day, where the Giants are maximizing scant resources like they did when they came to London with no receivers and pulling off a huge win. And then you've got a stacked defense, stacked backfield that can run it, and $250 million quarterback, and you're barely scraping wins together. I think they could lose in London.
Do you think they're under pressure too much, though, these coaches, Matt LaFleur, Nathaniel Hackett, to use, say, Wilson and Rodgers? Like, Rodgers quite clearly wants to play that, the phrase has been used a lot, hero ball in the last few weeks, because that's what he knows can or has got them out of jail in the past. But both of those teams, when healthy, of course, and obviously it's Williams is out at the moment in Denver, but have two very strong running backs in the backfield that aren't getting enough carries, aren't establishing a run. And you look at last week with Green Bay, it was 3-3 at halftime. And somebody said to me, like, oh, yeah, but they were down, they were behind at times in that game, so they couldn't establish the run. It's like, you had a whole half. No one was scoring.
Look at the Giants game that we called. When the running game was winning in the game, and then they just went to the air and had those two drives back-to-back where they basically did like a 3 or 4 and out, overthrow, underthrow, suddenly you're under pressure, don't convert, move the chains, and then you're off the field again, give the Giants the ball with momentum, and that's why you're losing games. Whereas when they were actually going run game, play action, they were shredding the Giants. And it's like, and we called it when we were doing the game, like, why have they gone away from that?
Yeah, first two drives, they moved perfectly down the field as you would want the Green Bay Packers offense to move against a pretty good defense in the New York Giants. And as you say, yeah, it was, oh, it's not complete. We're not racking up the points massively. Better start airing it out to these guys that aren't as good as what we used to have. Like, yeah, it's baffling. And whether that comes on Wilson and Rodgers' shoulders as kind of field generals down there, or whether it comes on Hackett and LaFleur, I'm not sure. But like, particularly in Green Bay right now, that Rodgers-LaFleur relationship is breaking a lot.
Yeah.
with Rodgers saying that he wants to simplify the playbook. And it's like, how much more do you need to simplify it? Like, it looks really fucking basic at the moment and you're not executing, and LaFleur has no idea what he's saying. Like, that's not a good look for a football team at this point.
No, not at all.
Just going back to what you're saying about teams with bad coaches, can I just talk about Arthur Smith a little bit? Because I feel like he is in the running at the moment to being like one of the best coaches of the year for the Falcons. He is just making so much of like what should be a really, really limited team. Like, there's guys, we have Cordell Patterson down last weekend and we run for 150, 170 yards. And he's just pulling in guys that you've never heard of. And Huntley, Algier, like, it's like Mariota is carrying it himself. Like, they've lost three games, they've won three games. But the games they've lost, we lost the Saints by one. We lost to the Bucks by 6. And there was that sack on Tom Brady that was not given to us. And then we lost the other game by 3, I think. So, like, yeah, against the Rams. So, I don't know. We've, like, been in all these games. I just feel like you're talking about teams making the most of what they've got. Like, the Giants haven't got, like, apart from Barkley, that yeah, they haven't got a stellar team, like, especially on offense. Their defense is doing really well, but even on defense, like, they were slated coming into the year of having like maybe a bottom five defense. I remember people talking about it, like, nobody was talking about the Giants defense in the offseason, and suddenly here we are and they're one of the best and they're controlling games. And like, that is nice. It's nice, like, for me as a Falcons fan to see like my team getting coached well and like performing above where they are.
Imagine if you'd had this coaching like 6 years ago.
So, do you think that the Falcons beat the Bengals? I think that's a good matchup.
Well, I've got them in my bet this week to beat the Bengals. So,
is that with your heart or with your head?
That's with my heart. But I often have I often throw the Falcons in there probably when I shouldn't. But so the spread on this game, 6.5. +6.5 for the Falcons, which I think shows a complete lack of respect, given what I've just said about the scores in their games. They've been within one score of every game. Mm. And they've just come off a win against the 49ers where they won by 2 touchdowns and shut them out in the second half.
That was unexpected. That did surprise me.
Yeah, although the 49ers were massively beaten up.
Defense as well was the defensive line in particular was really out with...
Bosa was out. Trent Williams is out. Their cornerback's now out. I can't remember his name. Their strong safety's out. Like, they always seem like a team that's injured, don't they? Like, since
this
Shanahan's been there.
Interesting about the NFL as well is that people always think, like, oh, why is the guy breaking down? Why is the guy? But from a sports science perspective, certain teams consistently have more injuries, and to me that speaks to an institutional problem in terms of training structure and performance, as opposed to the individuals themselves, because it's like, what are these guys doing in the offseason? What are these guys doing in OTAs, mini camp, training camp? that when they get to, it's only week six, you'd expect this level of attrition week 12 probably, where you've got like a good 3 months of football under your belt, and people are either struggling to get to the bye or coming off a bye, trying to get back healthy and like managing themselves, and then you probably see them breaking down. But to have this level of attrition across the board, I think speaks to more of like a strength coach, sports science, load management style
situation. Yeah, you might be right. That's sad if that's the case.
Yeah. Just because it's so consistent. Yeah.
With that, I mean, I could imagine Salah, Robert Salah, when he was in charge of that defense, being like, we don't let up, and putting people through their paces in that mode, because he is that kind of old school guy. Sure. And Shanahan, maybe, because his dad was obviously a coach, so maybe he's learned the older tricks of the trade rather than being a little more modern with it. But he seems like a fairly switched on guy, Shanahan.
I think he'd be a good guy to play for, to be honest. Whereas, like, you know, like AFC North football is nose to the grindstone stuff, and like you'd expect it because that's the brand. Whereas, then again, like Niners are strong running game in your face, and you only really get that level of aggression and dominance from carrying pads and hitting people.
I mean, I'm only going to speak to your words with that, A, as somebody that was in the AFC North, and B, that somebody knows about like preseason training and things like that in a hard-nosed division. I don't think my time in Aberystwyth during university in the 1 week sports week before, and which included going out every night, is quite the same.
Yeah, playing on a hangover, Christian, have you... So I've just been crowing about the Falcons. Ollie doesn't want to talk about the Eagles. Do you support... I know you played for the Steelers. Do you support the Steelers as well, or have you got...
Yeah. I was a Steelers fan from when I was a kid.
Really? That's crazy.
Yeah. It was honestly nuts. It was so surreal. That's why every day I went into the building, I was literally pinching myself. I was like... So I still support them, even though obviously it's... But they beat the Bucks. Like I was on Wynnette Coombs. He's like, oh, shocking. 1-4. He sees it done. I was like, if there's a man who'll get them out of a hole, it's Coach Tomlin. He'll find a way to sneak a win or engineer a victory. And
he likes that winning record, doesn't he?
That's a huge scalp, because you go 1-5, that's horrendous. Like that is legitimately horrendous. But 2-4, you go 2-5, it gives you a bit of a buffer. But they could win this weekend.
Who are they playing this weekend? Sorry.
Who have they got this week? I looked up.
I think it's a hard one again. We're saying the Jazz last week, but they've got a run of...
They've got the Dolphins. If Tua has his first game back, we never really know. And he's going to ride defense. As long as Minka Fitzpatrick's marshaled in the backfield, then you can kind of contain Tyreek Hill from having some super explosives. And then you just have to just like inch up the field, really. So that's definitely a winnable game.
There's it some is, of yeah.
Go 3-4, and then it's not... all's lost. I remember, I think we were 1-4, then we might have won 5 on the bounce or 6 on the bounce, like that. And then suddenly it's a completely different story.
Are the Bengals the top of that division and they're 3-3? I know they've got the same record as the Falcons because I looked at it earlier.
The Ravens are 3-3.
Yeah, so like you're not far. That's the crazy thing is like, so we're tied with the Bucks at 3-3 in our division. Mm-hmm. Like there's only a couple of divisions, like Ollie's division. Although I guess the Giants are one back, but like where like the top and the bottom are so close, like you could completely flip a switch after the bye week. A lot of these teams and people will forget about the first half, and suddenly you're walking into the playoffs. Like
you have to remember though that the Steelers have just lost what was Jazz, who's normally the third person on here, Christian, who you're filling in for perfectly because you're not being a belligerent asshole like Jazz is.
Yeah, but it's weird. I'm warming to a Steelers fan. It's an odd sensation.
But he is a Steelers fan, and he has been cooing about the Kenny Pickett experience. When Kenny Pickett comes in, it's all going to be great. And he was in for like 5 minutes, showed a little bit, and then sodded off with a bloody injury. But I imagine it's going to be Trubisky back under center again then this week, which... he didn't do too badly when he came in at the back of last week.
He was like 14 of 17, 160 odd yards when he came in. If there's ever like a big FU game to have where you just think like, you've benched me, I'm going to come out and torch it. Because also there's no pressure. I think that's the big difference. Some players, when the bright lights come on, like one of my tight end coaches was like, don't start acting funny when the lights come on. As in like, when you step up to the big stage, you better know what you're going to be able to do, because... sometimes that's a big thing. Like in every sport, it's half of it's managing pressure. It's like my dad always used to say with boxers, like he's a great gym fighter, but as soon as it comes to the actual fight, they just crumble. And I don't want to speak to that being the situation, but maybe it's
No, I do. Sell him, throw him down the river. Yeah.
Maybe, but genuinely, maybe it's, I come in as a backup. No one expects anything from me. I've just been benched. I'm going to show you. And that's my prove it style. Whereas
the Nick Foles kind of hero.
Exactly. Status. Exactly.
Fitzpatrick exactly. kind of thing. Yeah. Well, that's the thing though. He's going to be starting this week. So we're going to find out.
Yeah.
But he's still the backup though. Because yeah. Coach Tomlin said like, yeah. it will be the starter going forward. Because you can't flip flop because then that just messes the whole dynamic of
that's
the team.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, but then it's interesting if he torches it and has like 300 yards in the air, which is probably not going to happen. But if that did happen,
we're getting very far ahead of ourselves. No.
Get one win and the
this is the story of the season. Everyone's like, there's a quarterback controversy every single time a starter goes down. It's like, oh, the backups won a game, as if the backups like the Dallas situation. Everyone's like, oh, Cooper rushed it. I think it was just a medium like angle just to sell some freaking stories and get some clicks because no one in their right mind. You have a $160 million quarterback who's gone down injured, and you've won a few games because you have the best defense in the league, and suddenly you're thinking you're going to ride the backup to the Super Bowl this far out.
Yeah, that'd never happen. Never happen. You've got to do it in week 16, week 15. That's when you ride the backup to the Super Bowl.
Because it's a five-game stretch. Yeah. Five-game stretch. You need to string together five games. Yeah. Whereas from now, you're looking at a season's worth of football to be able to win with that guy.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen at quarterback, unfortunately.
Although you say no sane person would ever think that that's a realistic thing. You're also talking about a Dallas Cowboys organization that decides to do the unbelievable and the insane
doesn't
on every
normal,
occasion. You know, whether it's
expectations,
not getting set up properly, whether it's Jerry Jones coming out before his coach has even spoken to the media, or whether it's, you know, Mike McCarthy unable to handle a freaking media press conference or whatever. Yeah, that's... You never bet against Dallas in that sort of scenario in this season, really? Man. It's been so weird. Do you like the fact, because you said the football's bad, the games are difficult to work out who's going to win, which is therefore kind of exciting. I mean, even like the back end of the 6 o'clock window last week, is it worth losing a bit of quality of football to have this league that is so open right now? And there's two really good teams in the NFL this year, and everybody else is kind of there as well, basically. I think Buffalo and Kansas are the two standout teams in the NFL at the moment, and everybody
not
else
backing
is
your own team
because it's one quarter every day. Do it. Just, I'm not going to be the idiot who goes on record with this like 6-0. Fuck everybody.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a middle ground, mate. You can call yourself one of the top three teams.
I think that defense is phenomenal in Philadelphia right now, and if everybody can stay healthy, then it's the best team in the NFC, and it's really well schemed and really well run. And for instance, I mean, the way they took out Micah Parsons out of the game for a half, at least a half, and it was the crucial half that then made sure that Philly could establish a lead and get it done. That's massive, because you've also just shown the rest of the league that you can nullify Micah Parsons if you really want to. So I quite like that, as the whole of the NFL is a copycat league. Other people will look at that tape and go, how did they do that? Right, that's how we can try and do that. And it suddenly forces Dallas's defense to adjust quite a bit. It's all about staying healthy. If people stay healthy, then, you know, fingers crossed, because 6-0. But I also think Dallas and New York are only going to lose like three or four more games in the rest of this season as well. And it's going to be three teams from the East going into the playoffs.
Can I just say as well, I don't mean to burst anyone's bubbles, but the year after I left, I think the Steelers went like 9-0 and then collapsed at the end of the season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember.
I think it's because they had a similar strength schedule as what the NFC East has this year.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to burst any bubbles, but there may be some schedule stat padding. A little bit.
100%.
So I don't think you can read into 6-0 being equal to another team's 5-1.
You see what I did here? I dampened it all down. And you guys were like, no, get behind it, you get behind it. And as soon as I got behind it, you were like, yeah, but it's great, is it?
Brilliant.
You did this on air when I was like, yo, is it better to have...
You're like, oh, Christian, sometimes it's good. I'm like, nah, never. Then a couple of things, oh, it's actually really good that they got the penalties, they got more field position. You're like, just said that. I was like, nah, different situation.
And I've got no answer back, because I'm just like, yeah, it is. I guess I don't know the NFL. God damn it.
Hanging him out to dry.
See, that's the legal mumbo mind twisting that you've got there as well, though. That's very good. That's very
mischievous.
Good. Really. Yeah, no, I do think it's obviously it's great, but I'm not going to get carried away just yet, because I think that all three of those teams could make the playoffs and all three of them could have a very rude awakening when you get into playoff football. I just don't know who else in the NFC is going to actually give them a rude awakening unless the Niners get healthy.
Yeah, home field advantage as well, going to the link, it's in Philly when they know they've got a team that's performed all season. That's going to be a riot.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty mental on the weekend, to be honest, on Sunday Night Football. And I mean, it's great at the moment for the city of Philadelphia because you've got the Phillies doing so well in the baseball. Basketball's just coming back with a lot of expectation. Like, in terms of a sports city, that place, if the Phillies win the World Series and then the Eagles get to a Super Bowl, that place will explode because they really are the two biggest sports franchises in that city. Baseball fills the void, which the NFL was on, not on, sorry. Then NFL comes back in, everybody gets back on the Eagles. Basketball's there if they can not fuck up too much kind of thing. But yeah, yeah, and no one cares about the Philadelphia Union. Sorry, MLS, but like that's just the case, isn't it? But Buffalo and Kansas are the best two teams in the league without a doubt. And we saw that last weekend as well. That was phenomenal.
So do you think when they run it back, who are you picking?
Oh, I hope they play each other. That'd be so good. I'd really hope the Bills get over the line.
I'd take Buffalo again.
Yeah.
Would you?
I think that defense is better than Kansas's.
That's always been the case, though. Kansas's problem has always been, okay, Patrick, you have to score more points. Mm-hmm. That's been the answer, really. It's not that they've had bad defenses, but it's not been the shutout defense that you need to really legitimize the defense kind of carrying everything, you know?
And I think Josh Allen is showing, and I don't think he can keep this level of physical play up for more than a few seasons, but I think Josh Allen is showing his physical specimen as well as the improvements we've seen in his arm. Like, physically, he's more unstoppable, I think, than Mahomes. But they're two different.
Six.
Yeah. And yeah. Built like a brick shithouse. Like, yeah. As a linebacker, you wouldn't want to go up against him at all. Maybe
it's not that he's not that dissimilar, like, to Cam Newton in terms of... And I wonder what the stats are in terms of, like, rushing touchdowns at this stage of their careers. I bet they're not far off. And like Cam Newton's like the best like touchdown scoring machine the NFL's ever seen. I don't know.
Apart from Jalen Hurts, man. Jalen Hurts, this last couple
streaming it all not back. Not buying into it, not having you. His legs are great. Yeah, but he's not going to be able to keep this up for a long time and that arm's not great. I can see what you're doing from a mile off here, mate. I can absolutely see it.
But the thing is, I think, especially when teams, say like a Buffalo and Kansas play in season, the second game is very different to the first because you have film. You have in-game experience that you can then adjust off of in the second. Like you look at the Bucs Super Bowl run, they got annihilated by the Saints the whole way through, going to New Orleans and absolutely just walk out just having decimated them.
Yeah.
So I think if Kansas get an extra defensive guy, maybe in a trade or something, I think Kansas will win.
Get Tyrann Mathieu back from the Saints and save him from whatever he's become there.
Oh, he looks lost there, doesn't he? I thought that was a really good signing as well. I thought he'd fit in really well. I think they're asking him to do too much because they let go. Who's that safety? They let go of Marcus Williams like 2 seasons ago and they've let go of someone else. They gave away someone to the Eagles, didn't they, Ollie?
Yeah, yeah.
What's his name? Gardner, that's it.
Came in and we got him in a trade like.
And I don't know why they
started.
He was like a really
like
good
starting
player.
Safety. And it's like, oh, thank you very much. Yeah. Like, we'll have that.
Yeah, for nothing as well. It's a completely bizarre move. And
the Eagles have gone from having a terrible secondary to like absolute shutdown beast with like. Yeah. It's awesome. Big play Slay coming up. Bradbury in there as well. It's been great. You want to know Cam Newton, by the way, rushing TDs.
Yeah.
Had 14 in his first season in the NFL. Yeah. So I'm not sure Josh Allen, even just with that mark, is going to be quite
all right
on that. But
14,
you know, yeah. I mean, jeez. What Allen's had
Josh
eight.
Allen's probably he's probably averaging yeah 7 or 8 is he a year?
Yeah, he's averaging 8 a year at the moment in his first 4 years in the NFL. And Cam Newton had 14.865, so he kind of dropped off after
14 is nuts. Yeah, I'm glad I brought that up because that's a cool stat to know.
Yeah,
14.
Quickly, before we talk any more current football, Christian, just to ask you a very quick question. Julio Jones or Mike Evans?
What, now or historically?
Let's go.
Career.
Career.
Julio, are you joking? It's not even close.
I don't know.
Julio Jones, 100%.
Thank you.
I'm taking Julio Jones.
Some sense, man.
I'm taking Julio
Jones. I think you might be one of the first that's like been so blunt with that question of...
No, who...
Okay, who said Mike Evans and what are their reasons?
Well, we wind Dave up because Mike Evans is 1,000-yard every single year receiver, absolute stud. And I still think he is that elite level of receiver in the NFL.
Underrated, though, because he doesn't get that many plaudits.
Yeah, well, and I think that's another point is that everybody's shouted about Julio Jones for so long. Mike Evans has just got on and been an outrageously good footballer.
That's the thing. It depends what question you're asking, because Julio in his prime is one of the best receivers ever. Whereas Mike Evans has never been like a top three receiver, I would say, since he's been in the league. But like, but if you're looking at the career now that he's compiling, especially as Julio's dropped off the last couple of years and Mike Evans kind of continued, and he's in his like, is it his 9th or 10th year, Mike Evans? Like, he's been around a long time. And like you said, getting 1,000 yards every year. He always gets touchdowns. He's had different quarterbacks. He's had bad quarterbacks as well, where there's like Julio's had Matt Ryan.
Well, that's the other thing. Mike Evans has been in a bad Bucs team at some of their worst in the last few years. And, you know, again, you lose some of the shine off that, don't you, when you're a receiver and your team's getting boxed out in 5 wins a season. You're still
But I think that I've always taken it as, and the reason you wind me up is that you're saying that he is like a better player. Like if you were drafting, you're just on the pitch, like you're in the school backyard and you're just drafting players and you're like, am I going to take Mike or Julio? Like, you're kidding me if you're not taking Julio Jones. That's like, just madness.
Yeah, there's no way. Because there's so many different angles you can approach it from, like who's going to take the top off of a game, who'd be more likely in their prime, it's not a question. It's Julio Jones. And then Julio Jones is like 6'4 or something. He's like an avatar. And in his prime, is running the full route tree. And he literally gallops like a prime stud in bloody horse races. Honestly, like I saw him in person play when they played Pittsburgh. And genuinely, I was just like, what the hell is this? Like, he's just a freak. Like, genuine just freak.
Yeah.
And his... obviously natural ability, that's doing him a disservice, but him in his prime, it was him or AB, really, wasn't it? It was like the back and forth of who's number one, but he's big body that can run a little guy's route tree.
Now, this is surprising. I didn't actually realize this. I've just had a look at their overall stats. Mike Evans has more touchdowns than Julio Jones.
But he's been doubled their whole career. Julio Jones is getting doubled every single game.
Yeah,
he was never a touchdown machine, actually. He had that year where he got like 1,700 yards and maybe like he got double digit touchdowns. But
he had almost
like,
a 300-yard game.
He did. He had a 300-yard game against the Panthers, which I think might be a record.
Insane.
I think Ryan threw for like 500 and he got 300 yards.
So what you're saying, he's a lot like Amari Cooper. He's like splashy. You know, he has like a few games and then he gets a few touchdowns. Then he goes quiet again and he has a big game and blows the top off and then goes quiet again. Whereas Evans,
I can't believe you. I'm getting filled with, I'm going to smash something. I can't deal with this debate every time. You're killing me, Ollie. I'm just glad Christian's on my side. That's one for Dave. Putting that in the win column.
All right, it won in the win column.
Move on.
That's also one of the reasons. I was only reminded of it because you keep putting the Evans jersey alongside the Jones jersey behind
you. Well, I have to.
Well,
so Christian, yeah. So I've got the Julio Jones jersey. Yeah. And then Jazz, who you haven't met yet, he bought me the Mike Evans jersey to with me. But, you know, as a true sport, I put both up for the podcast.
Yeah,
I like it. But really, you're siding with the obvious.
Yeah, yeah. And it actually, when I hang them up, every time before the podcast, it fills me with a bit of like sadness that I'm doing it.
What could have been. Okay, then different question. Prime AB or Prime Julio?
Prime Julio.
Prime Julio, but AB is like the most impressive receiver. I don't know. I really don't know with that one. I love Julio Jones. AB in his prime was like money. Like seeing him, Roethlisberger could just chuck the ball up and he was going to get it. He's like, he's not a tall guy. He's like 6 foot, 6 foot one.
He's
and
not
he was getting that ball.
5'10", max.
Is it? I swear he's 6 foot.
He's not a big guy. He's not that.
But that's why I
but
go
that's
Julio.
Not tall though, either. That's... No, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, Ollie.
No, I know.
His point of catch was like the same as Julio.
But that's like why I would rather build around. If you were going to have one in their prime and the other in the prime, I would take Julio, because I think Julio he's a bigger target. He would inspire more confidence.
He was fast. He was faster as well.
And unfortunately, it's so difficult to have that question as well, because you know what an absolute piece AB is now.
It's really difficult
to take that
Christian,
off.
Christian, you're right. Five foot ten and a half, which is even more impressive. What is going on?
Which definitely means 5'10". If they're adding the half on it, you know that's it's 5'10", AB. Don't worry.
Wow, you called it. That's impressive. Yeah, 5'10", 185 pounds. Julio Jones is 6'5", 225 or whatever.
And runs like 4'4".
Mm.
Yeah.
5'10 and a half actually is also the number of Spotify's plays that AB's had of his album. So, you know, that's pretty good as well. It's good. He's linking it all together. It's very nice of him. You see why I get looks every so often during those Talksport broadcasts, Christian, from people. And it's like what I want to say and what I can't say.
I love it. I love it.
Christian, tell me about tight ends then. It's the position you plays. Like, who's, if you're going to do a rank now, like, current tight ends, and not just this season, but like, you know, their performance over the last few years. Like, who's your top three?
Travis Kelce's top.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in terms of completeness, he fits that system because he doesn't want to block. Do you know what I mean? Like, not that he doesn't want to block, serviceable blocker, but that's not why you have him in the team.
Sure.
If you want an all rounder, Mark Andrews.
He's sick, isn't he? Yeah.
He's just solid, man. Like he's genuinely can do it all.
Yeah.
Doesn't have the wiggle of like a Travis Kelce, but he's an anomaly, you know. I think TJ Hockenson's underrated because he's in a bad system. He's having like a Stafford-y effect in Detroit, where if he's plugged into, let's say he's Tyler Higbee at the Rams, I think he's going off. Yeah. I think that'd be
that's a specimen. He's a big guy. He's fast. He's got good hands. Yeah, he needs to go to another team, doesn't he? I don't know what deal he's on, but it'd be nice to see him at a good team. What do you think about George Kittle? Because I feel like I've drafted him in fantasy like 3 years in a row, and I'm so disappointed in his like production. I know he's been injured, but
I think it's because also you have to remember the style of play he played. Remember, he's like pancaking defensive linemen, defensive end. Like, people forget that, like, the trenches is so attritional, especially when you're giving up 20 pounds to a guy at a time. And he was just running through people. His yak stats, like, yards after catch stats. Remember that season, I think, like, 4 years ago or something?
Yeah.
Absolutely nuts. Like, he's just trucking people for fun. That does catch up with you. Like, it really does. I feel like that explosion, that pop that we would have seen before, not that it's gone in any regard, but, like, system-wise, he's not getting the same production out of it, as well as maybe his body's not giving him exactly what he wants in the same way. It's just father time and like and snap count in that system. Like Travis Kelce's not playing in that system. Mm-hmm. You need a very specific kind of tight end to play in that system.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they got a book, basically.
yeah, exactly. So it kind of, and obviously like Gronk's now out of the league as well, who was another anomaly. When I was coming up, and I had no idea, I just literally watched such a broad spectrum of guys and just tried to cherry pick different pieces to develop my own style. Today, who's underrated because quarterback and elite brain, Jason Witten.
Okay, I mean,
is he underrated?
Unfortunately, I heard too many people talking about him too much in terms of like NFC East battles, and so you had to kind of.
Yeah.
What I will say is, what I learned from him is, especially back end of career. Limited athlete, unreal production with the limitations.
Yeah.
That's why I say underrated because, he got the plaudits and stuff like, talismanic player. But if you actually break down his game, so smart and so efficient, like the definition of a vet playing the position, because always in the right place at the right time, not minimal exertion, but understanding you have zero pop, you're not going to dominate physically. So everything was technique, and running the option route better than anyone else and just sitting in the zone.
Efficient football.
Yeah.
That's the part that I think is underrated about, because everyone's like, Travis Kelce, touchdown machine, all this stuff. But for me, when I was like really breaking down film, it just showed me that there's more than one way to play the game. And especially for him trying to add years to his career, it was really interesting because there's no highlight plays whatsoever, but half of you want from what you want from a good and elite tight end is reliability, and that's what he had. So speaking it from about it from that lens, like that was actually really eye-opening, because it's not, you're not pancaking people like Kittle, you're not scoring touchdowns, crazy touchdowns, running in the middle, just improvising like Travis Kelce, and you're not Gronk, but you're still in the elite category because your production and the impact that you have on a game in such subtle ways, when you actually break down film, it's like either stuff that happens where you sit in the zone and then you're just like 4 yards, 5 yards, just churning just small incremental plays. I think that unless you really take time to just watch a specific position, you really miss a lot of like the unseen stuff. And that's kind of, that was really eye-opening for me in terms of how he played the game, for sure. I think Dallas Goedert for Philly is a very good player.
But that's been it's been a weird conveyor belt in Philadelphia, because you went from Brent Celek, really good, I thought very underrated tight end in the grand scheme of things. You talk about players that had longevity in their career, and they had that, Celek had that for years. And then just as Celek was starting to get to that, ooh, starting to go on that decline now, Zach Ertz came through in behind.
And then is so good.
And points. Then with Ertz, they did the exact same thing with, all right, Dallas Goedert. We'll just bring him on now as well at the right time. There's just been three consistent, really good, adaptable, versatile, but also multi-skilled athletes in that position. Ertz was Go on, mate. Sorry.
What do you think about him going to Ertz going to Cardinals then?
I mean, I don't mind. Look, like, the guy won us a Super Bowl, scored a game-winning touchdown in a Super Bowl. Never said a bad thing about Philadelphia, never left with like a huff and a puff and like, I don't want to be here. And he did like the complete opposite of the modern day NFL player of just being like, hey guys, like, I had a great time here. We had a great time. Everybody's decided it's time to move on. Like, I'm going to enjoy playing against you, but I also really appreciate the team. Like, I think that he just acted with a bit of decorum, which is so rare, you know. He didn't ring up the coach and put it on Instagram. He didn't get rid of all the Eagles stuff off his social media while he plays video games or whatever. He just went about and kind of kept it like a business transaction. Look, it's time for us to move on. Yeah. I mean, I wish him well, as long as it's not winning a playoff game against the Eagles. Like, basically.
Well, don't worry about that.
Do you think the Cardinals will make it to the playoffs?
Well, no. I mean, I doubt it.
But we were saying like how crazy the divisions are. They're one game back. And they look terrible
it's
to
mental,
me.
Mental, isn't it? It's
one really game back.
Crazy.
Guess who's back?
D-Hop.
Back this week.
My fantasy. I'm basically needing it. But Cliff Kingsbury. Right, Kyler, you've been running around like a headless chicken because I haven't given you any plays. I need you to launch it downfield. And we've got a guy coming back and basically just throw it to him and see if you can just make something happen. I think that's pretty much the game plan.
Kyler, you know how you throw grenades in Modern Warfare? Well, you're going to have to do that, like, down to that guy and pretend he's wearing the same shirt as you, but pretend he's the one you're trying to grenade, and yeah, then he'll get it. Yeah, we fine.
That's great. God, if they had to coach him in terms of Call of Duty. Look, you know, it's kind of like we're playing Capture the Flag, but like the flag is in their end zone and you need to get over there, and then when you get the ball over the line, that's kind of like you've won the game, you know?
No, Kyler, we changed ends. You fucking idiot. Base switch. New game came out this week, I think it was, or it's out in the next week or so. So
that thing about his performance stats and release, honestly, mad.
So it's so savage. And it's really damning on him. I mean, I love whoever went and did the research to have a look at all that. But it's really damning. And it means there's going to be so much more scrutiny with Hopkins coming back as the new game is released to see whether it goes up or down or kind of middles out or what. But who's your fantasy lineup then? Is this the 888 official sport?
Yeah, it is. I'm 3-3 at the moment. I've had a couple blips, but
me and Ollie are struggling to hell in ours.
Really? Honestly, it's my first time playing fantasy, and it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. Like, it's ridiculous because sometimes, like,
I hate it.
My team on paper is unreal. Why have I got no points? Why have I lost randomly to someone who has no idea what's going on? Okay, so my team is Justin Herbert, Derek Henry, Saquon Barkley, DeAndre Hopkins. Tyler Lockett, but I have Keenan Allen on the bench, and I don't know if he's going to play with hamstring. I'll swap those eventually. George Kittle, Chris Olave, Chris Boswell, and I've got the Bills defense, but they're on a bye, so I drafted in the Broncos. And Philly, I've got AJ Brown, but he's on a bye, that's why he's on the bench.
How many have you got in your league?
It's a 10-person league. It's not that many, and we've only got 3-person bench.
I was going to say that's a really good team.
Three person bench helps you. Bench means
you can't splash people. It's so hard because sometimes you're like, last week I just took the loss because I wasn't gonna drop someone for them because I had Derek Henry on a bye. I was like, there's no way I'm dropping him. Mm. So I just took the L for the week because I didn't want to lose anyone else.
Yeah,
but
so you've been carrying Hopkins,
been carrying.
So far, Stashing him. Better come and perform for you.
I need it.
I did that in the other league that I'm in, not the one with Dave. So I'm now at the end of this season. I'm going out with AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson, and DeAndre Hopkins as my three wide receivers
For the back end of the season
in a 12-team league as well. Yeah.
Oh man, that's madness. Have you got three number ones like that?
So you can do three keepers, but you can only keep a player for 3 years maximum. So say if you take Justin Jefferson in the fifth, next year he'll cost you a third, next year he'll cost you a first, and then if he costs you a first or a second, you can't keep him again, kind of thing. So it's quite a good way of, like, it stops people hoarding talent right at the top, and it really encourages smart picking further down, like 10, 11, 12, because you can then have somebody who's an absolute stud and sticks around for ages. So yeah, I think Jefferson cost me like a sixth or a seventh this year because he was my keeper from last year. But yeah.
Oh, what? That's incredible value.
Yeah. And then Miles Sanders, Jonathan Taylor, and Josh Jacobs as my three running backs.
Jonathan Taylor, disappointment this season, though.
Yeah, that's Indianapolis all over, though, right?
It's really weird. It's really weird situation there.
Is that coaching? Is that Frank Reich? Is that Matt Ryan getting to grips with a brand new team?
Matt Ryan's a season late on that switch.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the right fit right now. I don't see much positivity coming from that marriage at all.
He had a good last game though.
Yeah, but that's one game. Like, he's an elite quarterback. Yeah. You'd expect that. Like, you're gonna produce, but it's the consistency of it. And then also you don't have the bell cow of Jonathan Taylor doing like 2,000 yards rushing or something stupid like that. Yeah. I think it's weird. Who have Indianapolis got this week? Because I
the Titans.
That's who's winning that. I think Titans win that.
I'd say the Titans are the favorite. I did bet on the Colts, but just for getting the
That feels like a real coin flip. Like, the Colts last week showed you. I mean, they were out of that game at one point against Jacksonville. They looked like Jacksonville were kind of giving them the rundown midway through it. I mean, last week was one of those weeks where the fourth quarter just seemed to flip so many different games. I mean, that Jets Packers game was awesome. Yeah, awesome to watch.
Who would have picked? And then didn't Sauce Gardner put on the cheese head?
Yeah, he did. I went.
Lazard knocked it off.
I went Jets on Talksport last week because Will and Nat both went Green Bay, and I went, look, we're bringing them the game. We've got the live commentary of it. We're doing it with the Jets Network. Look, I'll go Jets. It's fine. So that's another one for the freaking visitors on the show, because they do a rankings of Will, Nat, and then guests have a like grouped pick'em thing. And at the moment, guests are winning by, I think, 3 against Will and then against Nat. So the actual hosts of the show are not doing well at all at this point.
If only you could transfer that knowledge into winning some bets, Ollie. That would
Not working out. Yeah, Christian, sorry. We do like a 6-team accumulator each week as well to try and see if we can win some money on here. We just never win.
One of my mates taps me up and I was like, okay. You know the game we caught for when it was Green Bay Giants?
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, this is the one team that lost was the Giants won. I was like, sorry, mate. Like, I didn't, everyone thought it was going to be that way. I think interesting ones this week as well. Browns-Ravens. Browns are 2-4. Ravens are 3-3. I feel like it's a must-win divisional matchup for the Ravens. I'd expect them to come out on top, but divisional rivals, and also Nick Chubb on the other end. And is Deshaun Watson going to play this year?
I don't know. I've seen some weird videos of him missing some pretty easy throws in training.
Because he hasn't played for a year.
Yeah.
It's not like he's going to come back in and just be tortured.
I think you have to play him because you've paid that much money. In the same way you're going to have to play Dak because you've paid Dak, you're going to have to play Watson.
Do you think that it matters where the Browns are? Like, if they're potentially playing for a playoff spot by the end of the season, or when's he due to come back? Week 11 or 12? 12, I think.
It's a 10-game suspension. They've got the bye. It's basically against the Texans in week 12, I think.
Right. So I guess, do you think it depends what their record is then? Whether they sit him for the rest of the...
I think they'd love to do it under the radar. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, throw him in somewhere. And you can't do that, A, with a quarterback, and B, with it being the Texans as the first game. Yeah. Like, it's like the NFL went, fine, if you're going to have him, we're going to have him returning against his former club that's also implicated in all of this absolute shitstorm. Mm-hmm.
They love a storyline. The NFL's, I think they've been chatting to Vince McMahon for a little bit of WWE scripting.
Well. Let's not start casting aspersions about our great overlords behind the Shield, okay? You know?
Well, have you seen the ownership stuff that's going on at the moment with the Commanders as well? It's madness. And then the Colts owner came out and said, I think that he should sell the team, kind of thing. He should be anymore.
Jerry Jones has made a comment this week as well about something to do with the owners, and like, we're not going to be bullied around and everything. But Dan Snyder's just apparently sat on this treasure trove of dirt, which doesn't touch the owners anyway. I mean, we saw that with Kraft. Like, you can get Handy J's all you want if you're an owner, and the NFL just has to
get married 3 years later. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I think it's definitely interesting from just a whole NFL branding perspective, because the image of the game is like, obviously you have to protect the Shield and stuff like that. So obviously Roger Goodell works for the owners. Mm. His contract situation is dictated by the owners. But then it's like, you never see the owners come out like this. It's almost like they're like the Illuminati who just like band together, and then like you hear from them occasionally when it's like CBA time. But apart from that, it's relatively quiet really from the owners in terms of speaking about each other's organization. So that was quite an interesting development in the past couple of days, I think.
It's like mutually assured destruction, isn't it? I guess it's hard to come out and set a precedent of getting rid of an owner, but I mean, hopefully they do move them on. I bet there's a lot of pressure behind the scenes, because like you said, it's a big distraction. And I don't know, like, he's clearly a scumbag. So.
I think the last thing you want is, the last thing the NFL wants is the owners being the storyline as well.
No, and that's not in the interest for it to be in the headlines at all. I don't think that's good for anyone. I don't think it's good for the players or the future of the game, all that stuff. I think with stable, especially having played for like the Rooney family and then hearing stories about other franchises and stuff, I was thinking about this the other day, is that like, Mr. Rooney was like, shook everyone's hand, was always visible, always around. And then you forget the guy's like a billionaire, like so cool. Even like text me like when my parents were ill and stuff with COVID and stuff like that. And that like really hit home. And then when I'm seeing stories like this of other organizations, one, it made me grateful for playing for good ownership, because especially coming from where I was coming from, having no experience, it made a big difference where I was really welcome and made to feel like home. But then on the flip side is that not all ownership is equal. Not all playing situations are equal, but as a consequence of that ownership too. Mm-hmm. So it's just an interesting development, because then it's like, okay, if they do oust this owner, what's the criteria for the new ownership as well? Because there's a big rebrand needed for that whole organization. They've changed the name. They've put in a new, new president? I think they put a new president in last year or something like that, or a new GM.
At the Commanders.
So it's like, I feel like intentionally they're trying to go about scrubbing it and restarting and starting with a fresh face. So I think it's good, because it's almost like a modern reboot of a values-based organization that they're kind of trying to put a face on it too. But it would just be interesting of the process of getting rid of a billionaire. Ultimately,
especially
who's a part owner of the league,
and trying to hold people to ransom already. I mean, it's and enough stuff has been leaked out of Washington that's cost people their jobs already. I mean, just ask John Gruden, when it's like, wait, you were never hunting for me in the first place, what the hell's going on? It's like, well, John, but you did say these things, so unlucky, mate. But do you think ever, actually, you know, if Snyder ends up getting pushed out, do you think the NFL encourages an owner from outside of the US, like Qatari based ownership maybe, or you know, Latin American? They're trying to expand the global game. They're doing all of these initiatives to get, like, push teams out to specific areas of the world. You know, Asian ownership, Chinese part ownership, maybe. You know, there are a lot of billionaires out in the world.
I don't think that would be very popular.
Well, I don't think it would be very popular until you
CCP member going after an NFL organization.
Well, yeah, okay. China would be a bit of a loose one for them. But you could see them not being up for it until somebody says, but think how much this will grow the game in that country as we push more into the European market. We push more, perhaps, into the Middle Eastern Arab market. These guys like making money at the end of the day. That's the main thing. If we can keep making more than $3 billion a year, that's what we want. So I just wonder if they ever see that as an opportunity as well in the current kind of situation we're in.
Maybe.
It could definitely be a conversation. Because if you look at even the American ownership in the Premier League, with the Glazers and Arsenal's own, I can't remember what his name is.
Kroenke,
that's
just paid like $250 million to the city of St. Louis. That's no more players for Arsenal. Another transfer budget then?
Yeah. Madness. Oh, we're top of the league, so it's absolutely fine. But I do feel like football ownership. I feel like football ownership is not slightly different, but was it Shad Khan, the Jags owner? Mm. Obviously, like one of the few minority owners in the league. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because ultimately, money does talk, and international expansion is at the forefront of the NFL's mind. So it would really make sense if something came open, as well as you also remember it's like Virginia-based. Like in terms of the geography of the country, it would have a fan base that is more, I guess, globally minded than some other situations. So it actually could be a good fit for a non-domestic ownership group.
But then we just had like. Tepper took over the Panthers like 2 years ago, so there was an opportunity then, and it was an American who got it, and a hedge fund American, so like really American.
I wouldn't
like,
want to be the like, I wouldn't want to be the Middle Wall Eastern guy taking over in North Carolina. Like, I wouldn't want to be the first guy stepping into that arena, into the NFL in that place. You know, I think the location would say something. Like, if it was in like a New York based franchise as well, I don't know. Maybe though, because New York's got that punchiness about it that they probably want. Like, hey, we want a fucking American owner of this game.
I'd be surprised. It's an interesting. I never thought of it before. It's an interesting discussion. Like. I'd be surprised. I think that that's an exclusive club. I think that they would be not sure that they would approve that, the other owners. But I don't know. You never know.
You said, Christian, that you obviously had the Rooneys reach out to you. Have you had much kind of contact with the Steelers since you left, with many people in the organization and
just
stuff?
Just individual relationships, really. I think for my own peace of mind as well, like I did distance myself from it. Definitely initially, because like obviously when stuff comes to an end, it's tough. But I still text like three or four of the people like probably weekly.
That's cool.
Which is really nice. Nice. Especially it's strange. The life cycle of the NFL. So I was rookie class 2018. So coming up to 5 years. Yeah. End of the season. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the number of players that I came in with who are still in the league is not that many. It's really not that many. And especially players that you look around, so not even just with the Steelers, but you know who's rookie class, your year. And I'd probably say 80% are out of the league.
Damn.
Yeah. And it's now that I have a bit more distance from it that you kind of really realize that 3 year NFL not for long thing is true. It really is true, especially on the non-first rounder end, because I saw a seventh rounder get cut before final roster in rookie season. So drafted in April, you're gone in August, didn't play again, and went to Alabama as well. So big time program.
Wow.
And it's, you don't get, it did some workouts and then just phone doesn't ring. You're on the sofa on the street. And so like seeing those realities, it really does make you realize like it is very, very difficult to have a successful and prolonged career in the NFL. Like you can have a 2-3 year career and try and make the most of it. But that's why things like, I guess like having like a tanking concept is quite strange, because then it's like, well, to me, especially having gone to the Steelers where it was like Super Bowls or it's a bad season, which is, that's how it has to be. Because if you're really trying to win and go the distance, you have to have that that's the standard. So then when you kind of think about the fact that like some organizations obviously aren't in that position, then part of the reason why they might not be getting over the hump is because then really the only incentive for guys to play is money.
Mm.
Mm.
Is that really a championship mindset?
Well, that's when you get a team like a Jets where you've just got everybody's playing for their individual self as it was like a few years ago, right? I mean, yeah. But that also...
the Browns for like 20 years, yeah.
Does that championship mindset come from... and this kind of... I've got my own thoughts as well, but does that come from a coach? Does that come from the family or the organization that own this franchise? Or does it come from... I mean, the most... I would have thought, for instance, with the Rooneys, they wouldn't get a coach unless they had that mindset. So you'd argue that the mindset comes from the Rooneys, for instance.
Yeah.
But then you could have a coach that goes into a place that maybe doesn't have that sort of attitude and can bring that mindset in to some extent, at least. I just wonder where you think would be the most important place to have that mindset and where that kind of comes from.
It's all about culture. I think ultimately it's that kind of pyramid where if you have a hands-on owner like Mr. Rooney and the Rooney family, they're very involved in selecting the right person that fits how they want the team to look. If you have a hands-off owner who just comes to game, sits in a box, never see him at the facility, then that picks based on a different metrics. So then you go down the level. It's like, okay, the head coach, what kind of culture is the head coach trying to create? Because, you know, you hear about some really toxic cultures where players don't really like playing for the organization or that leader.
I thought he was going to give us a name. Well, players don't really like playing for.
The Jaguars last year. Like...
yeah, that's an easy one, I guess.
Yeah, that's an easy one. Urban Meyer, can't run it like that. But then like, I play with Ben Roethlisberger, Marquise Pouncey, Cam Hayward, and I would say ownership, unbelievable, didn't really have to get involved because they had the head coach who set the standard for the whole coaching pyramid. Then within that, when stuff goes wrong, the head coach steps up, takes it. But when stuff's rolling, it's actually very much internal. It's all player-led. Mm. Like, shut the door, no coach in the room. Like, you're 1-4. This is unacceptable. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a championship culture. Where it has to be top-down management and, like, guys, get up for this. Like, Coach Tom always used to say, like, there weren't really many rules because if I can't get you to do what you're meant to do, I'll just find someone else. And also, it's like, you're not the person I want in my team. So it's a very easy decision.
Yeah, I don't have to lay down the law because you should know what the law is. Yeah, that's a really good way of doing it, actually, running on accountability more than anything else, personal accountability as much as anyone. Yeah. How excited were you that James Harrison had left before he turned up?
I heard stuff, you know. I heard how he was with rookies. I went halfway through my first year. I was hearing some random stories about how James Harrison was with rookies. And like, I'd always watched him and be like, oh, he's so sick. And especially because he's an outside linebacker and I was a practice squad tight end.
Yeah,
I would have been going up against him.
Yeah.
And you can guarantee him being 6 foot, me being like 6'9", whatever. He would try and pancake me every single snap in practice because I already had, it was honestly, Steelers practices, especially with the pads are on, tasty. It's like a game. I think that's why I really valued as well was because my practice reps were as close to a game as I could get. I was going up against TJ Watt, Bud Dupree, Cam Hayward, Stephon Tuitt every single day. And that's what made me better because every single snap, even if it was like a walkthrough, I'm getting different looks from like hand techniques, different ways of like, okay, this is how they set up different rushes and things like that. So it was huge. But I know that if Debo was there, practice would have been like an even more scary experience.
I would have thought general day-to-day existence would have been more scary, to be honest. Like, I wouldn't want to see him in the lunchroom queue, let alone lining up in front.
He's got a scowl, that guy, isn't he? He's terrifying.
He's just blessed with the perfect resting bitch face. It's incredible. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Christian, I know I don't want to leave you on here for too long because I know you need to be studying and everything like that. But we should run through our bets for this week and see what we've got. Yeah, go on, Dave.
Oh, yeah, see what you think. Yeah, let me pull this up. I'm known on this podcast, Christian, for being, what should we say?
A wuss?
A bit boring, a bit of a wuss with my bets. I tend to get odds in the kind of 20s and 30s. Yeah. I've got a 73-1, which is massive for me. Massive.
Give us
73-1. So I got the Falcons beating the Bengals.
I think that's a loss, but yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think any bet that you're putting on this week, though, if you're not taking the Falcons spread at +6.5, I think you're mad. But yeah, I've got them to win because I'm a homer idiot. Cleveland Browns, I've got +6 against the Ravens because the Browns are in every game and they're scrappy. They're kind of like the Falcons. And the Ravens just can't close games. Like, they are so hot in the first half. And, like, Lamar Jackson looks great. And then they are just peeling off in the second half. So I think that's a good one. I took Tampa Bay against the Panthers just because that should be, you never know with the NFL, but that should
is
be
Baker
one.
Is Baker Mayfield still starting?
No, I don't think he's going to be starting this week.
I think he's injured.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which who saves us all.
Because they asked DJ Moore about it, and he listed 3 of the 4 quarterbacks on the roster. Couldn't remember one guy's name and was like, oh, whoever's playing, it just doesn't really matter to us.
So it's not Darnold then?
I don't think Darnold will be ready in time. I think it'll be the guy they brought in last week. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Oh, geez.
Yeah,
okay.
So that was a win. Especially...
Yeah, so I took that as an easy one. And then I got the Giants against the Jags because I don't believe in this Jags team. I think they're fugazi.
Also, it's more that the Giants will go to 6-1, and so that everyone's like, how? But they're nailed on for that one.
They're just getting the best schedule, like we talked about earlier. And then I've got the Colts over the Titans. Now I'm chasing the odds there because they are slight underdogs against the Titans.
What's the spread?
It's not a lot. It's like 2.5, I think.
It's a real small one. They're both really closely matched this week, which is a bit.
I think it's a coin flip, like Ollie said. So, you know, I went with
who
the
has
underdogs.
Home field Titans.
Titans.
It's at Tennessee. But I saw something from Matt Ryan last week.
Do you think Matt Ryan's going to go into Mike Vrabel's house with Derrick Henry in the backfield and come out with a win?
Do you think Derrick Henry has looked like Derrick Henry of this year?
Yeah, he has. I've got him in my fantasy and it's just been like...
Honestly,
the curse of running backs getting paid, you know?
Well, do you think it's... That's like a psychosomatic thing? Like, you just instinctively lose a bit of your, like, vump, if you know you've got...
Also, you have to remember, he was their whole offense for 3 seasons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the war of attrition on a running back is always going to be one that they end up losing. But yeah, I just wonder if you always want to pay them like 1 year before everybody gets paid, kind of thing. Yeah.
So do you think Saquon's going to get paid?
I read an article that they'd be foolish to, somebody was saying.
Has he got 1 year left?
This is it.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be tough because his agent is going to be all over it.
He's been playing unreal, but in terms of the Giants organization, there's so many other holes you need to fix.
I know. They can't afford to give him like $80 million.
He deserves it, though. In my opinion, he deserves to get paid a good amount of money, but I don't think he'll be with the Giants.
There's always the question of longevity when you've had 2 seasons played with injury, one completely out, one last year not fully fit for most of it as well. I mean, this year's been great, but already last 2 weeks, that shoulder that he did in London had cropped up again last week as well, and you're like, okay, now we're looking at a duff knee and maybe a duff shoulder too, and those are two big things that you can lose and don't get back properly. But sorry Dave, you were
I'm just listening. And then last one, Detroit Lions +7 against the Cowboys.
Who have you picked?
You've gone with the Lions to cover the spread.
Lions to cover the spread against the Cowboys.
Lions cover the spread at home, or are they
at Dallas?
Yeah.
So you think that the Detroit Lions are going to go into AT&T Stadium?
I'm not saying it's going
to
happen.
Off the back of the Cowboys losing to the Eagles, and this is arguably a mean machine tune-up game for Dallas.
Yeah.
And you think that is Dak coming back this game?
Don't think so. Don't think he's going to be back ready.
So basically, you need the Lions defense to you need Cooper Rush to basically just shit the bed and throw like 3 interceptions.
Well, the Cowboys don't score a lot of points. So I've got that. And I'm just backing the Lions offense to kind of show something and get within 7.
Dak was full participant today in training, actually.
And if there's ever a game to kind of get some reps, see how you're going. It could be this one.
It could be. I mean, look, Christian, I'm chasing odds here, all right? We're getting to 73 okay. and one. This is historic for me, all right?
But the reason why the odds are there,
Because it's unlikely.
You've got two terrible picks already.
But do you know how many times this season already we've gone, God, what would the odds have been for this, and this happening? There's been like three or four like major upsets that you're like, oh, if only I'd backed that it's as getting my
that,
upset.
It's yeah. getting that confident. I'm probably feeling myself as well because I was like, I was within 2 minutes last week of winning my bet last week. Mm-hmm. And then I got four out of six in the end because the Ravens lost. And who else lost, Ollie?
I got screwed over by someone else. I think 16.
Half the teams, yeah. But someone else lost that I bet on and it screwed my bet. But yeah, I don't know. It's unlikely, but 73-1, Christian. I'm going to get it. I'm getting it.
You know what? If it comes in, how much are you putting down?
Oh, just a pound. We only do a pound. Yeah, Jazz does £10 because he's a gang addict. But...
Yeah, he's a gang.
Oh, he's got that rich lifestyle. He's got that champagne taste.
Yeah,
mate, don't you don't know the joke. Half of it. Like, I don't even know this guy. Like, he's too much. And that's just the betting that he tells us about. So what's going on behind the scenes?
Like, oh, there's so much of that. Well, it's not just the betting that the problem is. It's everything else he spends money on as well. I mean...
Yeah, new golf clubs. Like, Ollie, should I get this microphone for the podcast? It costs like £1,500. all this stuff. It's crazy. Buying me Mike Evans jerseys that he, you know, just for a lot.
He's telling you the times he loses bets, but secretly he's like a betting kingpin. It's all just coming in every week.
I think he'd tell us.
Yeah, we'd definitely find out. Sorry. We'll have to get you back when Jazz is here as well so you can meet him and realise he's definitely not what you're trying to pay him
at. It is crazy this is the week that he's missing when an ex-Steelers player is on. I think he's probably going to be a bit upset about that.
We had to replace a Steeler for a Steeler. I'm just trying to keep the balance ready on this podcast.
Yeah, to be fair, it would be too many Steelers for me. I might have to miss that one.
Also, for Christian's sake, the number of questions about, so what Mike Tomlin like? What was he like on his cereal in the morning? God, what time does he get in the morning? When's the first time to say
Christian's
hello to him?
Christian's like
morning?
Looking at his watch within 2 minutes. Like, I gotta go, guys.
You play with TJ Watt. What's TJ Watt like? Was he friendly? Is he your best friend? I think he's the best player in the world. Did you think he was going to be the best player in the world? I mean, it just would have been disastrous. Yeah, don't worry.
Yeah, all right. We'll leave that.
Talking of Jazz, we've got his bet is a 79-1. He's going with the Falcons to beat the Bengals. He's going with the Giants to beat the Jags, the Jets to beat the Broncos, the Lions to cover the spread, the Chiefs to beat the Niners, and the Titans to beat the Colts.
I think that'll come in. That's more likely to come in.
That's
a lot of those are similar to me, though, pal.
You see what he does? He'll
got Lions.
You're in my
head. He picked Tennessee at home, and he picked...
Yeah. He's gone with the Giants, he's gone with the Falcons, he's gone with Lions plus +7. That you criticised heavily, and although I didn't say, I stayed away from the Jets game. But he's gone Titans.
I think the Jets will beat the Broncos. I think the Jets are Broncos. Yeah.
I do like that bet. Right, fair play. I do like that bet. That is good. And the Chiefs will murder them.
The only iffy one is the Lions to cover the spread. Apart from, if you really, think
I know. I don't feel good about it. I don't feel good about it.
So I'd had a couple of drinks.
All right. What have you got to? 300-1 or something.
189-1.
Oh my God. You've taken every underdog in the 6 o'clock games or something.
Almost all of them are underdogs, yeah. There's only one overdog. So I'm taking the Browns to beat the Ravens. Mm-hmm. I am taking the Giants to win against the Jaguars.
That's a problem.
And the Jets to beat the Broncos. I'm taking the Bengals to beat the Falcons.
Okay, yeah.
And then I'm taking the Colts to beat the Titans. And I'm picking the Lions to beat the Cowboys.
Oh, to beat the Cowboys.
The last two are going
to
mess you up.
Yeah.
I can't see the Lions.
Those are the two.
Cowboys.
Those are the two that I was like.
The last two.
That's where the drinking came in.
Anyhow, the Lions go into AT&T. I would just want to watch Stephen A. Smith on First Take with Michael Irvin.
That would be brutal. Point. I just wanted that Jerry Jones camera, the full footage for the last 5 minutes, if that happened. Just watching him in his box. Jerry looking down at Dak, doing nothing. Looking at Zeke,
nothing. It could happen.
Micah Parsons has been shut out all game because the Eagles have shown everybody how to do it. That would be, Yeah, but I'm also, I enjoyed the Lions ride at the start of the season. I didn't get on board when everybody was like going, oh my God, they're amazing. Are they going to be a great team? But I do think they're a good enough team that can cause problems for people if they want to. And it is the NFC East, so nobody's that good.
So, yeah, I don't like Ollie. This is another thing, Christian, a trope on the podcast. If we all three of us go, we don't tell each other our bets beforehand. Mm. If all three of us go on the same team to win, we definitely lose. So the fact that we've all gone for the Giants, it means that this is a whole complete waste of time.
The Giants to go to their second loss of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's over. It's over.
Trevor Lawrence will put up 350 yards in the first half. It's game over by that point. It'll all be done. Also, you never bet on an early game. You never take a Thursday night football or a London game. You never.
It's madness. Those are the ones that just like it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
TNF is a mess. I don't know. We had no touchdowns.
That's because the Broncos are on TNF every week.
Well, aren't they on prime time boring. Again? This no, they're not on prime time.
They've got two more this season, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That Russell Wilson's God. A grade A psychopath. that advert is so funny.
Russell Wilson.
But yeah, there's not many like when we've spoken about like games coming up every single week, and there's not many that you know Bills Chiefs got you excited. This week it's all that because of the messy football.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not expecting Tampa Bay Carolina to be exciting unless Tampa Bay make it exciting themselves.
I think Bengals Falcons is the best game of that 6 o'clock. Genuinely, I'm not just being a Falcons fan. I think that's going to be the tightest, most fun game.
I think
Browns Ravens,
that could be good. Yeah, fair enough.
AFC North rivalry,
and I do love watching Nick Chubb run as well. That is like one of my favorite things in football.
Yeah.
And watching Myles Garrett get to Lamar Jackson will be fun.
Honestly, that guy's enormous.
He is a beast.
Well, if you're saying that, I feel better then.
Yeah, because he's just like... When I went over there, because especially in England, like I walk down the street and like I'm probably one of the biggest people in the country, to be fair. You go over there. There's
by fame and ego or by size? What?
But you genuinely, I went over to America and I was getting thrown around like a rag doll in practice. Yeah. And I did a high school practice with Evan Neal. I'm looking him eye to eye when he's 16 and he's 360 pounds. I'm just like, they do not exist in England. People like that. They don't. They just categorically do not. It's not a thing.
Is that and the growth hormones in the milk or?
I don't know, man. Like the NFL is literally just, there's like people pretty much bred for positions because they're just enormous. They're just huge, huge people, huge humans. And the fact that I could get shoes in size 15 over there just says it all.
Yeah, it's the country you were meant to be in, really, right?
100%. I'm like, oh, things fit.
Yeah, I mean, do you think the international player pathway does... Obviously, it's provided some players, but do you think it becomes a real avenue eventually for like a consistent amount of people to be playing? Or do you think... Cause...
I think the academy is the long-term future of international. Okay. More so, because Will Bryce and James do a really good job of like literally scouring the whole earth to find talent, but I know the work it took me to get like a whisker of even touching a 53-man roster, and it's abnormal like effort and commitment and stuff like that. And I don't think it's easy to close a gap that's hard enough to close when you play the sport from 6 years old on a consistent basis. I do think that there are international guys who can do it. It's just about being able to find them at the right time, at the right age, with the right attitude, which is... Like, look at GMs. GMs get half their picks wrong. And these are guys that got a huge sample size and from college. And for the pathway to produce FA, Jordan, Samus Reyes, who I think he just signed for the Bears, Morris Boering, who got drafted. Having that in the spread of 5 years, if you were an academy program, you would take that as a hit. In terms of like, if you're, say you're Man United, you get that many players coming through to play the first team. It's amazing. So in terms of consistency, I think they'll continue to churn out like one or two every kind of 2-3 year cycle who's like a legit player to be able to play on Sundays, whether it's special teams or like bottom end roster and then grow through it. But I think the long-term future of the international game is going to be getting guys into college and then at least giving them, like for me, my first football practice was rookie minicamp at the highest level. That's and like mental. The stress associated with all that is just, it is crazy. And it takes the right attitude to be able to handle it. So I would say that it is viable, but not at scale. I think scale comes from the junior end, which is how do we get guys 17 to 19 or 20, get them into an NCAA setup, and then get them at least get the cobwebs, get the errors out before you hit the main stage.
Yeah.
And then it's on for sure.
3 years of playing in college creates more instinct than.
Exactly, because I would say I was ready to play in my third year. My first year, absolutely not. Couldn't put one foot in front of the other. Learning football, learning system, learning living in America, new place, coaches, new culture, all that stuff. Second year, knew the playbook like the back of my hand, but those instincts weren't really sharp until I got to November. Then after that, it's like, okay, let's go. I know what I'm doing, but I'd already had a 4-year professional career anyway, so like I had those elite habits and what it took to be a professional. I didn't have to learn that at that level. It was more of learning football. Whereas you throw in the professionalism element, the performance anxiety element, all of that other stuff that you have to learn when you want to play at a high stage, that's another year onto your development curve, in my opinion.
Coaching at all for you? I know you're going down the legal route, but have you ever thought about, you know, putting on a headset?
For fun, I'll do it for fun. Yeah.
But you wouldn't ever want to go and do like some coaching somewhere.
No. That coaching lifestyle. It's like coaching lifestyle is basically like the grind of a lawyer, except you have to deal with athletes and your job's on the line based on how they do.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So like, I could think I'm the best coach ever, but if I've got a mule that I have to turn into a stallion, like that's pretty much what my coach was tasked to do. Like I was a mule in terms of football experience, but like had the body type and had the willing. And I had to upskill so quickly. So like, luckily it worked. But if you've got someone who doesn't want to put in the hard yards, for me, I couldn't handle that situation because respectfully, it's not worth my time in terms of like, If I found someone that was willing, like say how I approach the game, 100%, I'd run through a brick wall for them. But there are a lot of athletes who rely on their natural gifts and don't put the work in to be a true professional. And I think I just butt heads with them.
Yeah. Well, I just think the lifestyle as well. Like we had Rich Wurzel on who went to Aberystwyth University where me and Ollie went and then is coaching now in a college in America. And how many places did he say he'd been, Ollie? Like he's lucky he's got like a really supportive wife and family and stuff.
But and I think he's bounced around the country.
Oh, he was listing them and it was like Georgia, Michigan, like just like Florida. Like I think he'd hit like maybe 6 or 8 states.
It sounded like that guy in Chappelle's show when he's like, and we're going to go to Washington, D.C. We're going to go to New Jersey. And we're going to go to Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. You forget as well. That's the equivalent of going like, okay, I'm in London. Oh, my job's in Moscow next week. Like,
yeah.
That's the geography of it all. It's not like you're going from North London to South.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as you say, every single week is like a job interview. Every game is basically a job interview.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, dude, man, it's been great fun catching up with you, bud. It's been
as always.
World class guest. Thank you so much for coming.
If you ever fancy doing this weekly,
I'll add that to the law stuff and all that. I had to do my calendar today of like what I've got coming up, and I was like, oh shit, I'm basically just going back into training camp mode for the next 8 weeks. There's just like no room to come up for air.